This was perceived in Europe as the worst, let's say, ethico-political catastrophe of the United States. First, they push for international court, then they sabotage it. People ask today, why are such crazy nationalists in Serbia? I'll tell you, I spoke with them. They told me, first, United States push, they are still, sorry, I will be very brief, putting pressure on us, deliver Milosevic, Karadzic, all the criminals to Hague. Then the same people come and sign the non-extradition treaty. So you are digging your own grave.
I have to break right now, but we're going to continue our discussion and we will broadcast this week, part two. Slavoj Žižek is our guest, leading European intellectual, speaking at the CUNY Grad Center tonight, part two of our discussion in the next few days. This is Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke and Sharif Abdelkaddous. Happy birthday to Emma Missouri, as well as Dick Forstner, Aaron Mattei, Anjali Kamat, Jeffrey Hagerman, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Robbie Karen, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Peter Curry, I'm Amy Gavin.
Wow, she didn't make it that time, did she? It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. It's time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. This is Emmanuel Goldstein joining you. on this Tuesday evening. Yes, yet another Tuesday evening where the presidential race is continuing in full swing after the events of last week. Last week was interesting. Last week we had a couple of correspondents on talking about their take in the various states that they were in, Texas and Ohio specifically. And can't say I'm totally surprised by the way things turned out. You know, it's interesting. I guess some people thought that Hillary Clinton did a little bit better than a lot of people were expecting. I think it's pretty much on target. Yeah, you know, she did win Ohio. Did she win Texas? That's the question. Everyone's saying she won Texas, but they still have not finished counting the caucus votes. Now, it's so difficult to try and explain this to people because I don't even understand it myself, but the way it works in Texas is that you have a primary, and you go and you vote in the primary, and it's an open primary too, so you don't have to be part of a particular party to be able to vote in that particular primary. You can be a Republican and vote for a Democratic candidate. You can go vote in the Democratic primary, or you can be a Democrat and vote in the Republican primary, or you can be independent and vote in either one. You can't vote in both, but you can vote in either one. Can't do that in New York. New York has a closed primary. You have to be part of a party. I don't like parties. I never did. Always stayed away from them. So I can't vote until November, after you all decide who the candidates are going to be. Yeah, ironic, isn't it? So, in Texas, though, it's even weirder because after you do that, then you go trotting off to a caucus. And a caucus is where you get together with a bunch of people and yell and scream at them for a while and get people to either agree with you or not agree with you. And, you know, I've never seen one. Never seen one. We don't have them in New York, so I don't know what they're like. Can you go as someone's guest? Could someone invite me to a caucus? Would I be allowed to come in and just sort of watch? That'd be kind of cool, but I don't think you can do that either. So, okay. I don't get to participate in the primary or the caucus, but in Texas, you get to do both. So, you have 2/3 of the delegates. Oh, yes, and of course, you're not directly voting for the people running. You couldn't have that. No, you're voting for the delegates to go to the convention and tell the convention who you voted for. And this is not even taking into account the superdelegates who can do whatever they want. What a system. So, okay, what happens is that these people go to the caucus in the evening time after they go to the primary. And the caucus runs for a few hours. Meanwhile, they're tallying up the primary votes. And that's what Hillary Clinton won. Not by very much. 51% to, I think, 49, 48%, something like that. And the way delegates are portioned out, unlike the Republican Party, where it's winner-take-all. In other words, you win Texas, you get all the delegates for Texas, and the people who vote for the other candidate or candidates, they don't get anything. Nothing. But the Democratic Party doesn't do it that way. They do it proportionally. So that means, basically, that if there were, say, 100 delegates, which there are not, but if there were, and it was 51-48, then Hillary Clinton would get 51 delegates and Barack Obama would get 48, meaning that she'd move ahead 3 delegates. She'd gain 3 delegates on him. So it's not like a huge win. It's a win, but it's not a huge win because he's still keeping up. But you add in the caucuses where Barack Obama at last count was leading by a healthy margin, something like 58% to 42% or something like that, a much bigger margin. And you add those in, and all of a sudden, she hasn't won anything in Texas. So all these reports that Hillary Clinton won Texas, that's not right. You can say Hillary Clinton won the Texas primary. You cannot say Hillary Clinton won Texas because she did not. In fact, it's quite likely when they finish counting, and you know what? They still have not finished counting. And that's a whole other thing right there. They apparently don't have to count and send in the results immediately. No, they don't have to do that. They can send it via the U.S. Postal Service. God help us all. They can simply drop the results for their local race, their local caucus results. And they can wait a few days, too. They don't have to do it right away. They can just drop it in the mail and send it to party headquarters. and it does not have to be reported until the end of March. So we won't know until then who actually won the caucus or how many delegate votes there are. But when that's all over, when that's finished, then we will know who won what and how, all that kind of thing. But I think we can say pretty safely that, yes, Hillary did better than most people were expecting her to do. But Barack, he maintained his lead. He maintained his lead of about 100 and change delegates. So if you look at everything that's left, we had Wyoming. Wyoming happened over the weekend. There was a caucus in Wyoming on Saturday, and Barack kicked her ass again. He kicked her ass. Yeah, close to, I think, 60% for him. And, you know, she has not been getting those kinds of wins. She's been getting wins in some of the bigger states. And, you know, that doesn't make any sense either, the way she's playing this. If you listen to how she phrases things, when she wins a big state, she says, we're going to need these big states. We're going to need these big states to beat the Republicans, and I'm winning the big states. Therefore, I'm going to beat the Republicans. As if the people who vote in those big states are only going to vote for her and will not vote for whoever the Democratic nominee happens to be. They're all going to just either stay home or vote for McCain. Makes no sense. Yeah, you need the big states, but it does not follow that because you beat your opponent in the Democratic primary in those big states that only you can win the big states. Doesn't follow. Sorry. You need more votes than the Republicans, and I think... I think it's certain that somebody can do that. I'm not sure who. But it's not guaranteed that it would be Hillary doing that. So you have that. You have that whole thing going on where sort of misperceptions are being thrown about. And, of course, for those who still don't have all the notes on how our election process works, in November, it's winner-take-all for the states. Yeah, the whole Electoral College nonsense, that's going to start all over again. So if... look at that. We're on repeat mode. Okay. No, that's enough. I don't want to hear it anymore. Don't want to hear that anymore. Thank you, though. Thank you. You have the Electoral College in November, and a state like Pennsylvania, a state like Ohio, a state like Florida. They could... why do I still hear it? Turn it off. Thank you. They can simply go completely Republican if there are slightly more votes. Actually, no, not necessarily slightly more votes, just slightly more. You know, it's just so complicated and ridiculous. It really is. So, anyway, yes, we had Wyoming over the weekend. Tonight is Mississippi. And guess who's going to kick whose ass tonight in Mississippi? Yeah, I think you know. So it's, if you add it all up and you look at what's ahead, yes, everyone's talking about Pennsylvania, I think, what's the 22nd of April? It's coming up more than a month from now. So we're going to get a much-needed rest. We're going to get a much-needed rest after tonight, but it's still going to continue. It's still going to keep on going. And I'm sure there'll be a debate or something, but the big race coming up, and this is a couple hundred delegates at stake. That'll be in Pennsylvania in a month and a half or so. But even if Hillary Clinton wins that state by the same margin she won in Ohio, which I think was about 55 to 45, as we calculated last week, it's not enough to catch up. Yeah, you can make a stride or two, gain 10, 15 delegates. But that's not taking into account the number of delegates that Obama is going to win in Mississippi tonight, what he won in Wyoming on Saturday. Here's what's happening. Here's where we're because I keep hearing the news analysts saying this as if it's a realistic chance that Hillary Clinton will edge ahead. And the only way she can do that is by winning like 80% of one of these big states. That's not going to happen. The way she can do it, and this is a very unpleasant prospect, is if at the end of it all, come convention time in August, Barack Obama is still ahead, and the superdelegates come in and sweep Hillary Clinton into power as the nominee. That is really the only way it can happen. Now, can you imagine? Can you imagine the anger amongst all those people who are, for the first time, feeling empowered, feeling like they can make a change in the way the system works, turning out in record numbers, lining up to vote, seeing their candidate moving ahead, seeing the impossible happen. African-American candidate. Middle name Hussein. Yeah, we all know that now. You know? And somebody who's young, someone who's articulate, someone who represents something different, whether or not he'll actually be something different, well, who's to say? I know there's a lot of cynicism out there. But sometimes it's just the thought that it's possible that's enough, not necessarily the reality of the situation. Can you imagine if that gets taken away? You have the popular vote. You win most of the states. You're holding your own. You're running a campaign that isn't resorting to negativity nearly as much as the other campaign. It's true. It really is. That whole 3 a.m. thing. I can't believe people bought that 3 a.m. thing. You know, the advertisement that Hillary Clinton was running. The phone rings at 3 a.m. Who do you want to answer? Hillary Clinton dressed up in a nice business attire suit for some reason at 3 in the morning? Or Barack Obama, who you don't even see because he's sleeping. Yeah, he's somewhere off camera. Don't know where he is. As if 3 o'clock in the morning is out of bounds for people. First of all, do you really think that George W. Bush or Bill Clinton or Ronald Reagan or any of those guys ever answered a phone in their lives when they're in the White House? Yeah, obviously in their lives, but when they're in the White House, do you think they actually picked up the phone and said, "Hello, who's this?" No, it doesn't work that way. Doesn't work that way. You get all kinds of aides and assistants and people like that that come to you and tell you, "Hey, this guy's on the phone. He says it's important." They do that. And you better believe they'd wake your ass up if you were asleep and it was important. And you're the president, you got to deal with that. That's going to, even McCain with all the sleeping pills he probably takes, he would have to wake up and deal with this. No question about that. It's a silly, negative way of trying to push your way into the front of people's minds, pushing the fear factor, making it seem like, you know, we'll be in danger if something happens and you elect this guy. Really unnecessary, too. And then the other thing that really, I think people started to see this, was that Hillary Clinton is acting like she's the front runner by offering, well, not really offering, but sort of hinting that, yeah, you know, we could run Barack Obama as our vice president. That's sort of reaching out to the people that want to vote for Barack Obama, but would vote for her if they were assured or had a good sense that he was going to be part of the ticket. It's a way of reaching, a really sneaky way of reaching out to those people. Preying on their fears, on their doubts. But over the weekend, Barack Obama said, no way, I'm not interested in that. I'm running for president, not for vice president. And how is it that the person who's in second place feels they can offer the vice presidency to the person who's in first place? It's unbelievable. Yet that's what's happening. And then, okay, this really got me. This happened over the weekend as well, or at least I saw it over the weekend. I think I saw it on Thursday, actually, where Hillary Clinton said that both her and John McCain have years of experience, whereas Barack Obama has speeches. And I said, oh my God, she just endorsed McCain over Obama. She just praised the Republican candidate and dissed her Democratic rival. I mean, that's just not done. How can you do something like that? And then the logical question, which Barack Obama himself raised, is, well, if Barack Obama is so inexperienced, why would you even consider him to be a vice presidential candidate, one heartbeat away from the presidency? How could you even consider that? All these deals and back rooms and all the corruption, it's all right there. It's really pretty sad. So, yeah, we're going to have a break after tonight. Actually, I'm not supposed to say this, but the reason being, the reason why there's a month gap like this between the primary tonight in Mississippi and the next primary in Pennsylvania in April, April 22nd, I believe, is because we have a fundraiser here at WUSB for the next month, starting next week. In fact, starting tomorrow, right after the Mississippi primary is when our fundraiser begins. And we worked this out in advance with them. We agreed not to fundraise during the primaries, and they agreed not to have a primary during our fundraiser. It helps everybody. I could get into the details as to why exactly we don't fundraise during the primaries and why they agreed to do this for us, but that would just take more time, and like I said, I'm not supposed to even talk about it. So, you want a reason, that's the reason. Yeah, starting tomorrow, WUSB will start its spring radiothon. In fact, that means next week at this time. You'll likely be hearing my voice saying, if you support the station, why not call us right now and support us? What's wrong with you people? I'll be saying that. Don't call now because there's nobody to pick up the phone. The room is dark. Okay, now there's very little happening in the political world, fortunately. Very little, except for this. And yes, the political scandal that just hit us yesterday here in New York. Okay, yeah. You know, you couldn't write this. You could not write this material because nobody would believe it if you did. And for those of you who don't know, I just happened to to click on a website when this, maybe 5 minutes after the headline was posted, saying that our esteemed governor, Governor Elliot Spitzer, has been nabbed, not necessarily nabbed, but caught up in a prostitution ring. I swear to God, this is right out of Dallas or something, the TV show, not the city. Yeah, apparently our governor was also known as, what was it, customer number 9 or something? We've got some of the some of the quotes here. In fact, one of our listeners was kind enough to send us one of the sections that specifically mentions 2600. Yeah, 2600, the Hacker magazine. Listen to this. At approximately 7:51 p.m., Tamika Rochelle Lewis, a.k.a. Rochelle, the defendant, using the 6587 number, received a call from Client 9. Client 9 is, of course, our governor. During the call, Lewis told Client 9 that the balance was around 26, believed to be a reference to 2600. But she would give him an exact number later. $2,600, that is. Lewis asked if, when Kristen went to pick up the key, she would have to give a name, or would she be able to say that she was one of Client 9's guests for whom he left an envelope? Lewis's and Client 9... No, wait, that shouldn't be an apostrophe there, should there? No, Lewis and Client 9 discussed how to arrange for Kristen to get the key to her hotel room. Lewis said that she would prefer if Kristen did not have to give a name. Client 9 said that he was trying to think this through. That's in quotes. Client 9 repeated that his balance was $2,600 and stated that maybe he would give her, a reference to Kristen, $3,600 and have $1,000 on balance. Lewis suggested making it $1,500 more. Client 9 said that would make it $4,100. Client 9 can add. Doesn't that matter? Doesn't that count for anything? Doesn't he get points for that? Our president can't add. He can add. And look at this. He's adding while he's talking on the phone. He's doing two things at once. Maybe even three things at once because he's probably thinking about the whole thing with Rochelle and Kristen and other things that he's probably planning. But yeah, right there. No calculator, nothing. He just said, yeah, that would make it $4,100. And said that he would look for a bank and see about it. Client 9 told Lewis to let him go down and take care of this and suggested that maybe he could put it, the hotel key, in an envelope with the concierge. And that was referred to as call 9725R. And yes, that's the 2600 connection to all this. But boy, can you imagine that? Our governor running around in the streets looking for ATMs to pay prostitutes? Well, I guess you can't really find an ATM that'll give you $4,100 bucks. Maybe he can. Maybe there's a whole special elite ATM network I don't know about. I got to say, I've got nothing against... Well, I mean, I do. I think prostitution's kind of demeaning and not very nice. But I've got nothing against people engaging in whatever behavior they engage in as long as there are no victims. But, you know, this is something that clearly... runs afoul of the law. Whether or not you agree with the law, it does run afoul of the law, and you are the governor. You are opening yourself up to all kinds of blackmail, all kinds of compromises in your authority. And it just makes you wonder, what were you thinking? How could you possibly think that you could get away with this forever? Or even for a little while? So for me, the biggest issue here is, what kind of judgment does this guy have? He's willing to take a risk like that. So, yeah, you know, it's interesting because here he is in this unenviable situation, unless it's some kind of frame-up, which I'd love to hear more about, but it doesn't look that way at the moment. There's just no way this guy can survive. So we are going to get a new governor. And as a result of all this... And the media wasn't catching this right away, but all you had to do was look it up, see who the lieutenant governor was, and you find out that his name is David Patterson. He'd be New York's first African-American governor. Not elected, appointed by Spitzer, but the way it works is that the governor's out, the lieutenant governor becomes the governor. Not only would he be the first African-American governor, he's also legally blind. I think he'd be the first governor to have that kind of a handicap. He'd be the fourth black governor in the nation's history. Can you believe that? In our nation's history, with 50 states, we've only had 3 black governors. Unbelievable, including, I believe, the current governor of Massachusetts. Now, Mr. Patterson, who I said is legally blind, would also be the first person with a significant physical disability to occupy the governor's mansion since Franklin D. Roosevelt, who lost the use of his legs to polio before his tenure as governor from 1929 to 1932. I'll bet a lot of you didn't know that. Well, maybe you knew that Franklin Roosevelt was crippled, but did you know he was governor of New York? Yeah. Mr. Patterson was elected lieutenant governor in 2006 as Mr. Spitzer's running mate. Okay, I'm wrong on that. He was elected. Wasn't appointed. But he wasn't elected governor, I guess is what I was trying to say. He had previously been a state senator since 1985, representing a district that includes parts of Harlem and the Upper West Side. He ran unsuccessfully for New York City Public Advocate in 1993 and for Manhattan Borough President in 1997. In 2002, he was elected leader of the Democratic minority in the state Senate, ousting the previous minority leader, State Senator Martin Carner of Brooklyn. David Patterson developed an infection as an infant. After 3 months, he was left totally blind in the left eye and with severely limited sight in the right. An advocate for the disabled, he completed the New York City Marathon in 1999. I've had this desire my whole life to prove people wrong, to show them I could do things they didn't think I could do. Well, he's about to do something that nobody expected him to do, and that's become governor of New York State. And from what I've heard, he's a great speaker, an inspirational figure. Could be some interesting times ahead. Maybe there's some good to come out of all this. Now, of course, Spitzer has not yet said he's going to resign, but really, does anybody out there think this guy has a chance of holding on? I mean, people compare this to Bill Clinton. It's no comparison. It's no comparison to Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton had an affair. Affairs aren't illegal. Paying prostitutes, that is illegal. Especially when you serve as a prosecutor for a good part of your life and you elevate yourself to a level above all the corruption. You know, you really kind of annoy the people around you because you have this superiority complex so that when you go down, people celebrate. Yeah, you always celebrate when the holier-than-thou wind up falling off their pedestals. And that's what's happening here. So he doesn't really have a whole lot of support. He's broken the law. He's basically betrayed those around him. It's not going to get much done. So my guess, in fact, let me just check the wire right now and see if he's resigned as of this hour. My guess is that by next show, he will certainly be out. No, he's still... Oh, look at that. The Dow went up 417 points today. My goodness, look at that. Huh. Oh, okay, so anyway, yeah. No, Spitzer is still in. He's has not yet resigned, but he will. Guaranteed, he will. What else has been going on? Oh, did you hear about this? This actually happened last week, last Monday. There were these arson attacks on these luxury homes, five luxury homes in the Seattle area, just north of Seattle, were engulfed in flames in what authorities are saying is a case of eco-terrorism. A sign with the letters ELF was found at the scene of the fires in the quote-unquote Street of Dreams development in Woodinville, Washington. Now, ELF stands for Earth Liberation Front. FBI calls them an eco-terrorist group. The sign also read, built green? Nope, black. Basically, apparently these McMansions were saying that they were, the people building them were saying these were economically friendly houses. Of course, they had to destroy the land to put them there in the first place. And, you know, of course, I'm not in favor of things that put people's lives at risk. And whenever you have to put out a fire, of course, your life is at risk. But terrorism? I don't think so. I don't think this is terrorism. Terrorism is when people are living in fear and they're targeted. They're targeted as innocent victims. Yeah. They're saying that it was an act of terror. An act of annoyance. An act of vandalism. But terror, I think you're really stretching it a bit there. We even had an ELF action here on Long Island, not too far from here, where some houses, some big houses, were set ablaze a few years ago. I think somebody was caught for it as well. The group itself, Earth Liberation Front, is completely non-hierarchical. I'm not even going to try to say that word. I can never do it. There is no hierarchy inside that group at all. In fact, members don't even know other members. You can do something and simply say you're ELF, and apparently that's okay. In fact, to really have a lot of fun, simply paint three letters ELF in front of some expensive homes, and boy, watch the fun. No, don't do that. In this particular case, these houses were unoccupied, and there was a lot of controversy. A lot of controversy about building these particular homes. I should have remembered. I should have remembered not to leave the phone on this week. I know after last week, I did that. All right, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. Actually, I'm charging my phone this week. It's plugged in and on. never learn. So yeah, you had this situation where I think it was swampland that had to be destroyed. And there was a lot of opposition to it. And I'm sure everybody who's opposed to it now is a suspect in this terrorist act. I see these houses going up everywhere, even here on Long Island. Maybe especially here on Long Island. You have a forest, you have a farm, and all of a sudden you have 50 houses that look exactly the same that are all bigger than anything that you've ever seen in your life. Who are all these people that need all this space? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Are they homeless? Are they homeless before they move into these huge mansions? It seems to me that we don't need mansions. We need houses that homeless people and poor people, people who have lost their mortgages, can move into. Those are the ones really being affected. I'm not seeing, you know, the Dow soars 417 points. I don't think people on Wall Street are that affected by the roller coaster ride going on there. Then you had that other thing that took place in Times Square. You heard about this, right? Some guy was apparently riding a bicycle. In fact, I drove by there not an hour before all this happened. I saw the whole area. Somebody went by on a bicycle and threw some improvised explosive device at the recruiting center right there in Times Square, you know, the Army Recruiting Center. And it blew up, broke some glass, nobody was hurt. Now, here's the thing. The guy just, I think he did something really dumb. He threw his bicycle away. apparently he drove down a few more blocks and threw his brand new 10-speed bicycle into the trash. He probably would have gotten away with it completely if he hadn't done that. Now there's evidence. There's something to look at. Trace the sale. Look for fingerprints. Things like that. So, whether or not they ever catch him, I don't know. It's interesting, though. Again, nobody was hurt. The place apparently was unoccupied at the time. I'm actually surprised more things like that have not happened in the past 5 years. You know, it's been 5 years now since this invasion, occupation, war, whatever you want to call it, started. Losing nearly 4,000 people. Maiming God knows how many more. Mentally tarnishing probably tens. You know, there's no excuse for me not turning it off that time. All right. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to actually go into silent mode. I'm sorry, the reason I didn't do that was because it would have taken me time to figure out how to go into the silent mode. So let me just hit this button here, and then we'll... And it takes a long time for some reason for the phone menu to come up on the screen. All right, going into the profile, silent mode, activate. Okay, this will not happen again. All right, 5 years with all this injury, all this death, all this mental anguish has taken place just on the side of the United States. Imagine what's happened on the other side, where so many more have been affected. And you have to ask yourself, how is it that people aren't hurling all sorts of objects at the recruiting centers? Because the recruiters are the guys who get these desperate people, these impressionable teenagers, to drop everything and head off to war. One of the best quotes I heard after seeing this particular thing happen was, I forget who said it, it was some politicians, no doubt. They said that these people are over there fighting for your right to protest. Have you ever heard anything more bizarre? We're sending people over to be maimed and killed in a senseless occupation of a land that was never a threat to us, and somehow our doing that enables people back here to protest against are doing that. Yeah, it's the most twisted logic I've seen. And yet that's how they garner support, by convincing people that yes, they're fighting for our rights over there. How about fighting for our rights over here? How about tearing down these quote unquote free speech zones and getting back some of the rights that have been taken away from us? How about that? You don't find those in Iraq, you find those right here. So, you know, while I don't support either throwing bombs at the recruiting centers, I do support hurling invectives at them and making their lives as miserable as they've made everybody else's lives. And believe me, they have. Yeah, some people will gain something out of it. Some people are into the whole military career and that kind of thing. But there are a lot of people who are trapped, and I feel a lot of sympathy for them. Let's just hope whoever gets in November knows how to get them back in as few pieces as possible. You know, it's also weird. I was thinking about this in the last couple of weeks, actually. If you're 20 years old today, if you're 20 years old, do you realize, well, you realize, obviously, but do we realize, do the people who are not 20 years old, do we realize that those people have never seen anybody leading this country who is not named Clinton or Bush? Isn't that weird? I mean, Bush was elected in 88, the senior Bush. Then we had two terms of Clinton. And then we had two terms of junior Bush. And now it's possible we might get another Clinton. I mean, you know, the monarchy in England has nothing on us. You know, you always had your Henrys and your Elizabeths and Marys and those kind of people. Never seemed to end. Here we got the same thing. Come on already. Let's mix it up a little bit. Get a Rosenbaum or somebody in there. Just somebody different. Just imagine what that must be like. to be 20 years old and realize that you've never seen a president other than a Clinton or a Bush. So that's some craziness right there. Okay, what else is crazy? A lot of things are crazy. Should I take phone calls? Yeah, why not? 631-632-9872. If the phones start ringing, we'll go into delay, as we do have delay active today. And I'd like to hear your feelings on what's going on in the world of politics, what's going on in the world of, I don't know, activism, some of the headlines that are happening. Our number again, 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. Craziness. You want craziness? A school policy banning student hugging has prompted dozens of East Valley, Arizona students to protest with a giant group hug across the street from campus. See, they can't do it on campus. They have to go across the street. Yeah, the no-hugging rule had previously been in the student handbook after many students began expressing concern. Yeah. Do you believe many students were expressing concern about public hugging and kissing in the hallways? I mean, yeah, you know, the hallways are for makeout sessions, but hugging? I just can't imagine people expressing concern. Certainly not many people expressing concern over that. But after that supposedly happened, the school began reinforcing the guideline by punishing huggers. And that led to the protest a couple of Fridays ago. Prior to the demonstration, the district said the principal and students brokered an agreement to clarify the no-hugging rule. According to the guidelines, small hugs, less than 2 seconds, are permitted, but longer ones and kissing are not. One student said, "We can only hug 2 seconds? That's ridiculous. It's barely even a hug." Kathy Barris of Mesa Public Schools says, "What we're doing here is hoping to help kids understand what's happening." Oh, yeah, you sure are. You're giving them a nice crash course in the lunacy of the world that awaits them once they get outside. No hug. As if that is the biggest problem facing schools today. Unreal. Okay, shall we look at some letters? We have so many letters. So many letters that we have not been reading over the last few weeks. Phone lines are open. If people want to call in, and I see a few lines lighting up, then we'll take phone calls. Otherwise, I'm fully prepared to just read letters for the rest of the hour, and I can do that too, because I've got so many. Listen, that's how heavy they are. These are letters we have not read yet. Tons and tons of letters. otw@2600.com is our email address. And the letters just keep pouring in. So before I go to the letters, I'm just going to reload the news site here, see if Governor Spitzer has resigned yet. And no, he has not. Okay, you're off the wall. I listen to your shows online all the time. But when I try to play them through Google Reader, it sounds like the Chipmunks on Speed, signed Matthew. You know, we get this occasionally. People write to us both at Off the Hook and Off the Wall saying this. Audio expert Junz says the following. It sounds like you need to upgrade the Flash player on your PC. For years, Flash-based MP3 implementations like Google Reader uses were plagued by a bug in Flash, which prevented it from properly decoding MP3s that were encoded at a sample rate that was not a multiple of 11.025 kilohertz. And that causes the chipmunk effect. The latest version of Flash Player corrects this bug. Go to adobe.com, click on the Get Flash Player button to update your installation. Or alternatively, you can subscribe to the broadband version of our off-the-hook/off-the-wall RSS feed, which you can find at www.2600.com/otw-broadband.xml. That's for the off-the-wall version. You might figure out what the off-the-hook version is. And those files are encoded at 64 kbps, 22.05 kilohertz. They play fine in Flash-based MP3 player applications. Thanks, Junz, for helping us out with that. It's great to have people who know what they're talking about to answer these questions, because I certainly don't. Dear Emmanuel, you've brought up a local newspaper's website on your show a number of times, talking about the crazy comments that people are permitted to leave. I do believe you're referring to Newsday, yes. I'm starting to see a number of sites opening up comments to news stories now. Even local TV news channels in my area have started to allow comments on their sites, and they seem to be largely unmoderated. I used to think I lived in a pretty nice place, but I'm somewhat shocked to see all the racist, hateful, and just plain stupid comments I see from residents. I can't help but notice on some sites how advertisements line the comments areas. So it's no wonder that they allow horrible comments, because it'll make other people reply and keep coming back to check for replies, thus being exposed to more ads. Think you nailed it there. Can't help but wonder what it would be like if websites like CNN or Fox News opened up comments for all their news stories. Just something to think about. Signed, listener in Puerto Rico. And yes, listener, you're right about this. It's ad-driven, for sure. That and also laziness, not wanting to take responsibility. Compare the listener or reader forum section in Newsday. You can find it at newsday.com, where everything basically devolves into racism or just hateful talk, which is completely tolerated and, in fact, endorsed by Newsday. And I say that because many is the time I've tried to report things as being completely out of control, outlandish, offensive. And some comments are taken out, but most are not. So somebody is there doing something, but they're not doing enough. That I call endorsement. Compare that to the New York Times, which also has some reader feedback sections. Now, there you have to register your email address, things are moderated, and there's some responsibility for the things that you say. You can't advocate killing people because they're black, things like that, which they do in the Newsday forums, and it's tolerated. So, yeah, there's a difference. You can do it properly. You can do it right. It takes work. Takes work, takes responsibility. So, it's good to see what people are saying, what they're thinking. But if you just open it up and let anything go, people will simply say the most outlandish thing they can possibly say just to get attention. And that's not free speech. That's just stupid speech. Okay, and the thing to remember is, for people who are saying, yeah, well, we have to allow free speech, yes, free speech is allowed. Anybody can do this. But do they have to do it under the name of a supposedly respectable institution? Anybody can start their own website, start their own publication, but you know what? No one's going to want to read it because it's dumb. But they have the right to do it. However, if you help them and you endorse them and you put your name over their name, you're making it very easy. And that doesn't serve free speech at all. Look at this. No phone calls. Maybe the transmitter's off. 631-632-9872. All right. Well, we'll keep going with the letters here. We have many of them. Dear Emmanuel, I just heard the off the wall for December 18th. Yes, we're going back. We're going back a ways. I was pleased to hear that you defend your views on gun control. I particularly liked when you said that people lived in fear because of guns. The idea that we have outside the USA is that Americans do not have more freedom, they have less, since they live in fear and they buy guns to protect themselves from other people who have guns. Many of those bought guns because they were afraid also. In my country, which is Portugal, you cannot buy a gun, period. You can only buy a gun in special shops after a lot of paperwork and background checks, and only if you can justify that you really need it. Okay, well then that's not really period. You can buy them under certain situations. So if you have mental problems or a violent background or you don't need a gun, you can't buy one. Needing a gun is a well-defined term. You need a gun if you are a night watchman for a company, and not all of those cases apply. Or if you carry a lot of money, if you own a jewelry store or something like that. A small exception can be made if you're a hunter, but you can only buy a shotgun, and a lot of other documentation and background checks and licenses apply in that case. The bottom line is, you can't have a gun. Only police officers have one, or robbers. It is accepted by all that our streets are safer than they would be if all could have a gun, even with some restrictions. However, I sincerely do not believe the USA will ever get rid of guns, as it's an acquired right and taste. You can't fight that. It's a pity. Signed, I don't know how to pronounce your name. J-O-A-O. Don't know how to pronounce it. I'm sorry. I could try, but I know I get it wrong. But thanks very much for writing in and showing your perspective. And yes, the cultures are different, but we can certainly learn a lot from other cultures. And take steps, at least. Okay, what else has been going on? Dear Emmanuel, in terms of privacy and how much of it is being taken away and how many people know so little about what is going on, what is the best way to convey the ongoing situation of privacy to other people who just don't understand? As more and more databases are being created, cameras being installed, and other methods of privacy invasion occur, the typical response from everyone is simply, I've got nothing to hide, so why does it matter? Just by using Facebook, I can tell what your religious views are, political views, how old you are, where you live, who you associate with. What is the best way to tell people the ramifications of this information and more, besides it being known to everyone? What kind of examples can you use to show people just how this could affect their lives in the not-too-distant future? Signed, Andrew. Very good question, Andrew. Very good question. I would say the best way to hammer it into people's heads is to just sort of transport yourself back to another era. Go back to the 1940s. Go back to Nazi Germany. Inject Facebook and MySpace and all these other websites into that period of time where everybody knows who everybody else is and can find them quickly. People post their class schedules. People post their religious affiliations, as you say, and their friends. And just imagine, in that situation, how easy it would be for authorities to simply track everybody down who fit a particular designation. Then ask yourself, are we really that different now? Oh yeah, we don't live in Nazi Germany, for sure. But are we really secure enough to believe that another 50 years can go by without something somewhere in the world like this happening again? And yeah, these things are not just in the United States, they're everywhere. These privacy intrusions, these voluntary privacy intrusions. I think that's the best way to hammer it into people's heads. If you really think that you've got nothing to hide, well, give me a couple of days. I'll find something that you want to hide. I'm sure of it. Everybody's got something to hide. If you don't have something to hide, you know, what's the point? What is the point? We are put here on Earth in order to make up things to hide. We really are. That's called life. What you think about certain people, what you did sometime. I'm not saying they have to be horrible things, just things you want to keep to yourself. Things you don't want advertised on a billboard in front of your name. I think people who just expose their entire lives are the most uninteresting people in the world. And that's why they don't care, because they really don't have anything that's all that intriguing in the first place. Okay, what else is going on here? Nice music at the end of the show, Emmanuel. Lurid and his whole story scare the crap out of me. What a society we're in. One wrong move and you're on lockdown. Heaven help us, but thanks for helping to get the word out. Lurid sounds like a good kid, too. He'll do fine in life if he can handle that sort of adversity with that much integrity and positiveness. Thanks, Matt Zero, for writing in with that. And, yeah, just saw Lurid, actually, a couple days ago, and doing well. And I'm sure he appreciates the sentiments. In fact, he was one of our correspondents last week for the Ohio primaries. But, yeah, lockdown. You know, it's funny. When that whole Times Square thing happened last week, they said Times Square is in lockdown. Times Square is in lockdown? What does that mean? What in God's name does that mean? How do you lock down Times Square? How do you lock down anything? Everybody's talking about lockdown now. Everything is lockdown this, lockdown that. My God. All it takes is just one dimwit starting to use a word like that, and it catches on, and everybody starts using it. What do you want to bet? I'm sure some of our listeners can confirm this, that there are parents out there who put their houses on lockdown. Say, "No, you're not going out. This house is on lockdown tonight." That's happening, right? I mean, that's happening amongst parents and kids. That's how crazy we've become, that we adopt this this prison mentality and apply it to every part of our lives. We are out of our minds. Okay, dear Emmanuel, I was interested. You know, I'm not taking calls. There, that's it. No calls tonight. Nobody called in. Maybe the transmitter is broken. I don't know. Or maybe the internet is broken. Yeah, well, too late. Next time I ask for phone calls, I hope they come in. We've been asking for 20 minutes now. No calls. Yeah, you see, there's a call. I knew this was going to happen. As soon as I dish out the guilt, then, you see, it's not worth it to go into delay and come out of delay with only 2 minutes left in the show. Not worth it. Sorry. I shouldn't have to beg like that. But write to us, otw@2600.com. As you see, eventually we read the letters. Dear Emmanuel, I was interested by yesterday's Off the Wall show back in December. I'm currently on probation in the state of Massachusetts for charges relating to an animal rights protest. I've had a very different experience with probation, and while not at all pleasant, it seems to be much less strict than the probation your guest was on in Ohio. In fact, not only do they allow me out of the county, but they also allowed me to travel to Mexico for a few weeks as well. However, it's definitely unnerving to know that if I go to the wrong party or if I'm just in the wrong place at the wrong time, any minor arrest can throw my charges back at me and possibly land me in prison. For prisoners with a vegan diet, it's even worse. They hardly ever have food that we can eat, and vegan prisoners have to go on hunger strike to get the food they need, and even that sometimes doesn't work. However, for prisoners of conscience, there is often a good support community ready to provide for them. One of the things I think is important is writing to prisoners and giving them support that way. Perhaps future issues of 2600 can include a small section listing the mailing addresses of hacker prisoners. Actually, you know, we do already. It's called the classified ads in the personal section. We have so many people writing in that are in prison. Some are for hacking offenses, some are for other offenses, but it's just good not to forget the human beings who are there. I know we want to. We want to think that all 2 million and change of the prisoners are worthless scum and don't deserve our attention, don't deserve our sympathy. They got themselves into this mess. But I think on this program and the other program, after we've met some of these people, after we've known some of these people ourselves, you realize that's not true. You realize these are human beings just like us, and it could happen to us any time. Just for being in the wrong place at the wrong time, or being targeted. Or making mistakes, which people do. Okay, dear Off the Wall, I know I'm a couple of weeks late, but I fell behind on my shows. Don't fall behind your shows, people. Don't fall behind. Listen to the shows the week they come out. We fell behind the letters. Don't throw that in our faces. I'm sorry. It happens. But we put out one show a week here. You can listen anytime before the next show, and then you'll be caught up. All right. Don't be like this listener who fell behind. I live in Florida. See, that's two strikes against him right there. I'm sorry. I'm just mad because of the phone response here. Let's just hope that's better next week when we're asking for support from the listeners. Anyway, I live in Florida, so I only get to listen to your show through podcasting, but I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed your January 1st show. It brought back a lot of great memories about where I was and what I was doing at the time when I first heard some of those clips from the original show. Keep up the great work. Signed, Mushin. Thank you, Mushin. And of course, you're referring to the clip show that we did. We did a clip show where we just basically had highlights from 2007 on January 1st. And that's because I was in Germany at the time and couldn't do a show. Yeah, it's always to suit me that these things happen, for my convenience. But I'm glad it worked out for you. Hey, Ed, this is another letter from Off the Wall. Downloadable software, India. Your house is called, she paused interrogatively, in which Megan had left us. Perhaps she had suddenly such nonsense as that. Said lady, there was no in the habit of composing them. Some regarded one side. Catherine had taken in a book to dinner. Haven't you your own name now? I'm sure it's to say, like mockery, the high voice of Keening. But apart from that, has it not occurred to you from school but Alan, and he declined the oil of his one the way he looked so sad and then laughed? Signed, Panarella Scullion. Well, Panarella, you said a mouthful there, and I wish we had more time to go into it and give this the feedback it deserves. But I think what you said basically just illustrates the fact that it takes all types to listen to the show. It takes fewer types to write to the show, but anybody is welcome to. OTW@2600.com. See you next week. Good night. Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing to worry about. We all know that, right? Yeah, right. This is Finn. You're listening to Finn's Revolution. It's 7 p.m. right here in WUSB Stony Brook.